All right. Well, welcome everybody. Tonight we are dealing with preparing for Pesach in a year like no other. I am fairly confident that we look back at this year in 5 or 10 years from now, this will be a historic time. Hopefully it will improve. We have a few more years than all of you, but this, of course, for those who work, 2000. This has a 9/11 vibe, where events are occurring, and this time not just in America but internationally, which are so impactful that will change our life very much. Like a couple of generations ago, the generation who went through the Depression, the generation who went through World War II, this is of that caliber. I don't know where. Obviously, we're only like about a week in for us, not even. And so we want to be prepared and understanding Pesach, which we do want to do every year. But I want to share with everybody, this time next week, I'm going to do a session, assuming either A, that if you are on quarantine, or B, you are practicing social distancing, that you are basically running a Seder for one or for a very few amount of people. Okay. So I want to be able to empower each of you to be able to run your own Seder as best you can. Assuming you might have to do it yourself and won't have the leisure of, you know, going to the stores multiple times, etc., because, you know, many stores already are making certain hours. And I think what I understand from my sources, we're going to be good in regard to kosher food supply in the New York, New Jersey area. We'll see. Although stores are warning their people, you know, buy what you need. You know, don't get into this, depression mentality where you are like a fearful there's not going to be enough stuff. There's going to be enough stuff. Okay, so that's the preliminary point. So we're gonna divide this class into two parts. One is to get a global understanding about chametz and matzah. Chametz, which of course the prohibition of leaven, which is essentially not owned. We're gonna go through all the various components. And it's a very simple question. It's simple but critical to understand really all of Pesach is. Why is the Torah so extreme about prohibiting chametz? I mean, like, what's the Torah? I mean, we don't have, for example, everybody's familiar, you're not allowed to eat non-kosher meat. But there's no prohibition of, I can't own it, right? There's no prohibition, there's no mitzvah of me to go and do involved in search and destroy the pork. There's no such obligation. I just can't eat it, or I can't eat milk and meat. So if I go, if I'm walking past the McDonald's, I just got to keep on walking. I don't have to go, you know, there's no radical rejection going on here. But chametz, as I'm going to show very briefly, I'm going to go through just sort of like just to reacquaint everybody with the Torah prohibitions. It is vast and extreme. So I want to basically, goal one is to understand why is the Torah going to war, if you will, with chametz, A, and we're going to understand that. And that will, my goal is that will give us appreciation of what's really happening about Pesach on a more deeper level. And then I'm going to shift the class to a practical what to do. And I want to share with you that what people do in preparation for Pesach is they spend a lot of time on the wrong things. And mostly they are, and of course the big factor is the spring cleaning. So we're gonna destroy some myths tonight as well, okay? And I want to make preparing for Pesach much more user friendly and much more doable, specifically when we don't necessarily gonna have people. We want people to come into our homes to help us clean or do other stuff that we might do on a different Pesach. Okay, so those are our two goals. Goal one is, why is the Torah so extreme in the prohibition of chametz? I'm going to do a share screen right now. And just to show, and I'm going to ask Jesse Frankel to read. Let's just go through the mitzvot that regards to Pesach. Go ahead.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Jesse.
Beautiful. So what are the various mitzvot and prohibitions? The Torah describes 8 mitzvot, 3 positive commandments, and 5 negative commandments. They include, I'm just going to read it off my paper, it's easier, the prohibition against eating chametz from the noon of the 14th of Nisan onward.
Well, let me go stop, so I'm going to explain that. So first of all, that means like this, that there's, interestingly enough, there's a special prohibition of eating chametz on Erev Pesach, which the obvious question is, it ain't Pesach, so why is there a prohibition of eating chametz? Does anybody know that?
Digestion?
Say it again? One at a time. Why is there a prohibition of eating chametz Erev Pesach from, noon onward? The rabbi
I would say... Yeah? Oh, sorry, this is Raquel. I would say the reason is because... if you're eating it at that point, it's very hard to clean up. And that it's a question of that you owned it up until that point, and you want to make sure that there's not a crumb left.
Okay, that's so basically, which that you're giving a sort of a the Torah is giving sort of a rabbinical fence approach of legislation that to ensure that we don't eat chametz on Pesach itself, we're going to back up the time. Till noon. Is that what you're suggesting, Raquel?
Yes, that's what I'm suggesting.
Yeah, okay. So, interestingly enough, really, Pesach actually is a merging of two holidays. There are two names of the holiday. There's Chag HaMatzot, which is the 7 days, biblically, of the 7 days of what we call Pesach. And Pesach, in a certain sense, begins Erev Pesach. When we had the temple, what was a major part of Pesach, which we don't hear today?
The sacrifice.
Yes, the Korban Pesach, the Passover offering, would be offered from noon onward. And therefore, we could not own chametz when we had the Korban Pesach, which I'm going to answer at the end, why that is. Now, the rabbis, but Raquel's correct, the rabbi says, you can't eat chametz at noon. We're going to back that up 2 hours before that. So really, on a typical day, chametz becomes forbidden, rabbinically, in eating around 10 o'clock on a perfect day. So, Raquel, you're correct rabbinically, but there's another dimension to Pesach. Okay, Jesse, keep on rocking.
Yes. Number two. The commandment to destroy all chametz from the 14th of Nisan onward. The rabbis added the rabbinic mitzvah of searching your house on the night of the 14th, on the night of the 14th night.
Oh, sorry, that's a little okay. Typo for me.
It's okay.
So there's a mitzvah of destroying the chametz, which, of course, we have the idea of burning the chametz, but what is the way, this is another question, what is the way, the principal way of us destroying chametz?
Burning it or selling it?
Nope.
Eating it. That's the easiest way.
Nope.
Burning it out?
Nope.
There's only so many ways. I could wait long enough and let it dissolve, but like, put it in a bathtub. It'll dissolve also.
The Torah says, Tashbisu et kol seor. Literally means you should destroy all chametz. But interesting, the prime method of getting rid of chametz is what we call the bitul. The nullification, the declaration that we say all chametz which is in my possession is like the dust of the earth, which I'm going to explain that as well. That you don't know what I'm talking about? After you do the searching on the nighttime, we do a declaration, and then in the morning when you finish your chametz, you do another declaration. But after you burn it, are you familiar with that? The nullification, the declaration, all chametz that I've any chametz or leaven that I have in my possession that I've seen or not seen. It should be considered like what? Like the dust of the earth. And we might say it should be ownerless and like the dust of the earth. Are you familiar with that? That's called bitul, nullification. According to the Rambam and others, that's the prime way of, quote unquote, destroying chametz. Which again, seems
pretty bizarre. Then why are we burning it the next morning?
Beautiful question. So we also burn it because there's a debate among in the Mishnah, what is the best method? One way is the tashbis. One reason is to get it is to make sure, even if we make that declaration, that we don't have it in our domain. So we actually get rid of it physically, not just through that declaration method. But I'm going to circle back. Like, what is that? What is it? Hocus pocus, magic, you know, abracadabra, the chametz is gone. It's not gone. If it's, you know, if you got a box of Entenmann's in your closet and you didn't sell it, and I do bittul, I mean, what did I really do? Okay, so we're going to get into that. Continue there, Jesse.
Number 3, it's a prohibition against eating chametz for the 7 days of Pesach. The punishment is karis, cutting off from the Jewish people.
This is the big one. Yeah. This is what really animates why we're very, very strict about chametz, because chametz, unlike any other prohibited food, this is the only prohibited food that you get karis, with a few others. But this is most commonly, this is we're for 7 days.
Hi, good evening. This is Jade.
Hey, Jade, welcome. So the chametz is, if a person would eat about an ounce, a kazayit of bread, which they can normally eat all the rest of the year, they would get karet if they did it knowingly, willingly, and on purpose. So again, why is that necessary? It seems to be like, you know, solving a small problem with a bazooka. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, just quickly, what are the other foods, like, for comparison? Like, what's equally bad?
Eating on Yom Kippur is also karet. If a person eats on Yom Kippur on purpose, it's also karet.
I just thought that eating bread is worse than, like, bacon-wrapped shrimp during Passover. I just think, like,
correct.
That is just awesome.
Eating a bagel on Pesach is far worse than having a pork chop.
Hi, this is Raquel. My question is, if you're given the leniency of selling your chametz to a neighbor, well, how does that work if technically no one's supposed to actually enter your apartment? So do you not have a leniency this year?
All right, so we're going to, that's an excellent question. The second part of our class, we'll get to the practical elements about exactly selling chametz. What's that all about? So we'll get into that. That's an excellent question. There's a lot of stuff here. Again, I'm just, you know, we'll try to get to everything. Well, you know, I know you guys are not leaving anywhere. All right, a little corona humor. All right, I'm here all night. Anyways, let's keep on going. So,
Nailed it.
Okay, keep on going, Jesse.
Number 4, the prohibition against chametz being seen in our possession for the 7 days of Pesach.
Yes, and 5.
Number 5, the prohibition against chametz being found in our possession for the 7 days of Pesach.
So interestingly enough, there are two prohibitions, which Ram counts separately, which the net result is I cannot own chametz. Chametz cannot be seen in my domain. It cannot be found in my domain. And why I need both, they cover different cases. But simply put, I can't own chametz. It can't be in my domain, whether it be my physical property or in another home or my office or anywhere which is my domain. Any chametz that is in my possession, I violate a Torah prohibition. Again, very rare. There's no, I can't think of another mitzvah where I can't own a forbidden food. I know in other words, you can own pork. You can have pork in your fridge. You just can't eat it. Okay?
Wait, I thought you couldn't derive any benefit.
You cannot go into the pork business, but you, let's say somebody handed you a prime pork chop, you know, you could give it to a friend as a gift who's not Jewish.
Really?
Yes.
Wouldn't giving someone a gift be deriving a benefit from it?
That is a quintessential example of getting benefit. There's no prohibition of getting benefit from pork. You can't go into the pork business because if anybody who's done work in food services, I was a waiter, full discretion. And when you're in the kitchen, you're munching. So if you're serving, if you're in a pork restaurant or pork butchery, you're going to be involved in tasting. It's just the nature of food services. But there's no technical prohibition. If somebody gave you, a whole bunch of pork baby back ribs, right? You can give it to your neighbor, baby. I know you want to do the song, you want to give it to your friend, no problem. Not a problem. But chametz, you can't own it. Thus, as Raquel pointed out, we have an obligation to the chametz that we want to keep over. We want to sell it so it's not in our possession. We keep now, let's go to some positive mitzvahs. Go on.
Six. Yep, the commandment to eat matzah on the night of Passover, or Pesach. Right.
Everybody's familiar with that? You got to eat matzah on the Seder night. Go on.
Number seven, the commandment to relate the story of the Exodus from Egypt on that night. The rabbis added the mitzvah of eating maror with the Passover offering.
No, hold on, mistake. Oops, typo, without the Passover offering.
Without the Passover offering.
Yeah, that's a bad one. Okay.
It's all good. The extra space was the part that was driving me nuts. All the right. Four cups of wine and the reciting of Hallel. There's more stuff.
No, the reciting of Hallel. The reciting of Hallel. I'll just leave it like that. And reciting of Hallel. Okay, so again, we have all these prohibitions forbidding chametz and like one mitzvah of telling over a story, which you think would be the main event, one mitzvah for eating matzah. And of course, another mitzvah of eating the Korban Pesach, but again, we don't have that in our day. So is everybody clear what our question is? Our question is, why the pervasive amount of mitzvot against chametz? A. B. You know, why the harshness? If I eat chametz on Pesach, I get kareis. Very harsh. I can't own chametz. What's up with that? I mean, even if I don't eat it. So what really is the Torah driving at? I mean, it's so extreme that it screams out what's going on. Now, the way to appreciate that is to look at a couple of verses in the Book of Devarim. Let me call about somebody else. Eitan Sasevich, you want to do a little reading action?
Sure. What am I reading here?
Safeguard the month.
Safeguard the month of standing grain so that you will be able to keep the Passover to God, your Lord, since it was in the month of standing grain that God, your Lord, brought you out of Egypt at night.
Okay, so this is the verse that says that the month of standing grain is the way Rabbi Kaplan, Rabbi Ari Kaplan, translate Chag Aviv, often translated as the springtime month, okay? Aviv could be stand grain, spring. So that's why roughly every 3 years we'll add another month of Adar to ensure that Pesach is always in the springtime, or at least springtime in Israel. Okay, go on.
In the place that God will choose to be dedicated to, his name, you shall sacrifice the Passover offering to God your Lord, along with other sheep and cattle.
Okay, so this says that Moshe is telling the Jewish people that when there's a place that God, you know, otherwise not a temple, you're going to do the sacrificing of the Korban Pesach. Okay, now we get to the key verse. Go on.
Do not eat any leaven with it. As part of the celebration, you shall eat matzah for 7 days. This shall be hardship bread, since you left Egypt in a rush. You will then remember the day you left Egypt all the days of your life.
Okay. What is the Torah's description of matzah?
Hardship bread.
Hardship bread. Affliction. So hardship bread or bread of affliction, the Hebrew word is lechem oni. Poor man's bread, hardship bread, those are all legitimate translations. Well, by definition, what is the verse really calling regular bread? What's the opposite of hardship bread?
Like luxury bread?
Good bread.
Exactly. Oh, I like that.
Luxury bread. Now, a little historical fact. Who was the first nation to develop fluffy, well-risen bread?
America?
No.
Egypt. And also they, actually I read that they did beer. Was yes. More correct. Before bread.
Correct. Beer and bread.
Wow. So I thought monks developed
beer. Rabbi Penny, that's why what I had learned with actually Adina Berkowitz last week of why we stop eating chametz early in the morning of Erev Pesach is because of it was so common there in Egypt. So we wanted to have another further separation that we are leaving Egypt.
Well, we're gonna connect it but it is connected with, you can't eat it when you're offering the Korban Pesach, you can't be even an owner of chametz. So it's tied with the Korban Pesach. So we have to explain that a point. So so from that you see what really he says. The Torah is telling us, don't eat any leaven, don't eat chametz. As part of the celebration, you should eat matzah for 7 days. Okay, so the Torah is linking the two. There's chametz and there's matzah. Why? This shall be your hardship bread since you left Egypt in a rush. All right, to remember what occurred. Now, so what really are we doing during the seven, now, well, for us outside the land of Israel, 8 days of Pesach by eating matzah as our bread? What are we de facto declaring? What's really happening?
Our faith in God.
And
our belief in the Exodus.
I didn't see that jump.
Not Egyptians.
It's.
Go ahead. So, Max, you said what?
Not Egyptians.
Right.
How are we manifesting our non-Egyptianness?
By not eating Egyptian things.
Now, let's go a little deeper. Let me imagine after the tomorrow morning you're going to wake up, and it's time for breakfast, and you have on your counter a box of matzah, bagels, rye bread, English muffins. I don't know which one you're going to pick. I just know which one you're not going to pick for breakfast. And which one are you not going to pick for breakfast if you're really honest?
Box of matzah.
Not having the matzah.
What is matzah?
Just not the same.
There's no bread in the grocery stores. Matzah's all that was left.
Okay.
Matzah's all we have in the grocery stores.
All right. So the bottom line. Regardless if you do or do not, it was a theoretical case. If you got your bagel, your fried bread, your English muffin, your croissant, or your matzah, if it's a competition between the matzah and all the other competitors, matzah will lose all the time in general for most people. Okay? Most people eat matzah literally only 8 days of Pesach. And then what do Jews do after they've been fressing for 8 days straight right after Pesach is over?
Mimuna.
What do Ashkenazim do?
Pizza, bagels.
Pizza, come on. They have an auction. Who will buy? There's this, one of the main kosher pizza stores in Brooklyn uses this pent-up desire for chametz as a way to raise money for charity, for tzedakah. And last year, they sold the right of the first pie, the first post-Pesach pie for $787.
Genius.
Wow. How much did the second and third go?
No, then they didn't. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if they offered. That would be a good idea.
I mean, like, 7 minutes is worth it, probably.
Right. So the bottom line is, and anybody who has been to a kosher pizza store post Pesach, there is a line out the door. Now, I don't know about you, but do you see how Jews eat on Pesach?
Yes.
Now here's my question.
I also experience it.
Yes. Now here's my question to you. What holiday do Jews eat more? The 8-9 days of Sukkot or the 8 days of Pesach?
Pesach. Never eat as much cake than we do on Pesach.
Now, why is
that? I eat a lot.
Why is it? We're Jews eating a lot all the time, but leaving that point aside here, why are people eating so much on Pesach?
Because it's not the food they're used to. But if you're like me, it's everything's gluten-free, and normally it's much harder to find, but that's different.
Right. For Stephanie, this is a tremendous festival on many levels. Now, and we appreciate that. But for the glutenites, for the firm glutenites among us, why are we fressing like nobody's business?
Because you can't be satisfied. You're unsatisfied.
Ah,
you
just keep eating. Exactly. Because we feel that we're in a state of deprivation. Because bread is not just any food. What is bread?
It's the core of the meal.
It's a core. It's what we call a staple. No matter, I don't want to hear, I know, but I'm on a low-carb diet, yeah, it's true. Congratulations on your low-carb diet. But the bottom line is, we love bread, okay? And therefore, the Egyptians, having a good fluffy bread, a finely developed bread, is a fantastic experience. I mean, and that's and every you know, you go to fine dining, when you were able to do fine dining and actually sit in the restaurant, they would offer you some delicious one of their freshly made bread. Okay, so bread is the opposite of hardship bread. It is bread of luxury. Bread, the chametz, is the symbol of the materialistic lifestyle of Egypt. Coupled with, what do you have to eat? You can't eat anything with it. What can you not eat with what? You can't eat the Korban Pesach. What was the Korban Pesach? Those who had it in fellowship class passed. What was the Korban Pesach in the eyes of the Egyptian?
It was their God.
It was their God. Right. So the slaughtering of the Korban Pesach, the first offering in the Torah for the Jewish people, was the act of demonstrating the death of the pagan culture of Egypt and its complementary life of luxury that they embrace. So therefore, now let's start putting all the pieces together. As soon as we're going to offer the Korban Pesach, it will be wrong to have chametz with it, because chametz is the embodiment of the Egyptian lifestyle, which is a pursuit of materialism for materialism's sake. Making money for the sake of making money. Living the life of luxury for the benefit of the life of luxury. No, that's the good of life. So basically, Pesach, the reason why Pesach is a little bit painful, because really we are chametz addicts, and we got to go through a withdrawal. Now we understand why the Torah, quote, unquote, went to war. We know that the Torah says, if it's matzah versus chametz, you ain't doing matzah ever, because why would you want to do that? You know, you want to enjoy a luxurious bread along with a luxurious meal. So the Torah said, you can't have it, you can't own it, you can't even get any benefit from it. You got to get rid of it. Now, interesting, what do we say? The declaration called the bitul, which we say after the searching of the chametz, to search and then destroy it, is a repudiation of the chametz. You're basically saying, I want nothing to do with this chametz. In other words, it's like I'm an alcoholic. I'm Penny Rosenthal, and chametz to me is nothing. Now, the rabbis didn't trust that declaration because it might be a little hollow. So they said, just to be sure, we're going to make you gather it and get rid of it or sell it. But if you just did bittul, it would be, you're now, if it's an authentic bittul, you're no longer interested in its existence. Nachmanides added another sentence in his bittul. He says, all chametz I found or did not find should be like the dust of the earth, the lo rotzo bekiyumo, and I'm not interested in its existence. It's not it's a severing of your relationship to the chametz. Why? In order for the bread, why do we eat this bread? What is bread supposed to remind us about? What do we talk about at the Seder night?
Freedom.
Yes, it's a bread of geula, of freedom, of redemption. So we are, in order that the matzah becomes the star of the show, there can't be any assisting, can't be any other It cannot be on the stage. It's got to be in the spotlight, nothing else. Because it can't compete. It's a deprived bread. It's a poor man's bread. It's a bread of hardship. Nobody really wants it. It's a beleaguered bread. It's not fluffy. It's not chame. It's not having the, it's not risen. It doesn't got the fluff. You don't want it. It's not, and therefore it's psychologically less satisfying. That's why we're constantly munching, because we're not getting that, not that our, even though we are full, we don't have a psychological sense of satisfaction. Because really the Torah is giving us a short little bit of a rehab program for 8 days called Pesach. We're leaving Egypt. In other words, it's very easy. The statement has been made before, but I'm going to reiterate it. It was easy for the Jew to leave Egypt, but it's very hard to have the Egypt leave the Jew. And that really was going on here.
On you.
Okay, so the bottom line is, and that's what's going on with the Chametz. That, and that explains these rather severe and extreme point, because we love Chametz. We're used to having Chametz. We want the Chametz. We don't want the matzah. So the Torah had to pull out all the stops. They provide all the halachic weaponry available to it. The food is forbidden. You cannot get benefit. You cannot own it. Okay? They went a full DEFCON 5 on the Chametz. Okay? Is everybody clear about that? In order that we can have the matzah be the star of the show, and for us to withdraw from, have a focus on, you know, each year leaving a little bit of Egypt away, pulling a little bit of Egypt out of us. Okay? By analogy, in other words, all you here who are part of MG, could a person be a person who's really grown as an MGer, but keep all of their friends from college intact in the same way?
No.
Why not?
Because you're the average of the five people you spend your most time with.
I've heard that before, yes.
Yes, that is not my quote.
Right.
I've never heard that, but I like it.
That's true. The idea is because when we were in college, we had a certain lifestyle. So if I'm with everybody to the same degree of that lifestyle, I'm just going to be doing that lifestyle. But if I have decided to do a different lifestyle to change a community, I got to change my friends. By analogy, if I'm focused on matzah, the bread of redemption, and I'm rejecting the Egyptian lifestyle, the pagan lifestyle, the materialistic lifestyle, to a degree, I can't have the chametz around. Those are the bad college friends. Those are the ones that are doing the keggers. They're not invited.
You know, Rabbi Pinden, why do we only get rid of it for 8 days? Why not try and do with away with chametz all the time?
Excellent point. Because the Torah is not a religion of extremes. Because that's not realistic. The Torah cannot, what they call the phrase is, the Torah cannot legislate perfection. They can't say, here are the rules, be perfect. How long will it last? 11 minutes. Okay? The Torah is working with us. We can do it for 7-8 days. We can do that. And now it's not just simply a withdrawal, like, you know, we're not going to eat this, because that's why the Seder is the first night. Because we take out the matzah and we talk about the matzah. We talk about what the significance is. We discuss it. We cover it. We lift it. We break it. We carry it. We hide it. We do all kinds of stuff to give the meaning, to give context of meaning to the matzah. That it should convey all of the ideas of what the Exodus has to tell us. Okay? It's a double. It tells both about the slavery, the impoverishment, as well as the redemption, the swiftness of redemption. So that is the idea. So the Torah does not works with the Jew. Does not make it extreme. Pesach is once a year, and in biblically 7 days, and that's it. So that's the deal. Okay. So that is the basic principle of the why we are rejecting the chametz, and why we are, you know, changing over that matzah should be our bread. Now I want to change gears to, that was sort of the theoretical big picture. Now I'm going to shift gears into the practical, and with a specific element to focus upon this year, Okay, so I'm gonna paint the picture of this year. The challenge is, I don't know about you, but I've been in my house the last 5 days. And it's wonderful. Okay, so assuming there will be no bodies by the end of this period, but you know, so far so good. Sean Bias is still, we're still rocking it.
How many kids do you have home out of 6?
I have 2.
Okay, that's manageable.
That's manageable. Well said, manageable. Plus they're teenagers and they don't want to hang out with dad, which is great. That's about the right level. Anyways, so we continue. All right. I'm going to shift onto the screen, a little share screen. Boom. Okay. How do we prepare your house in under 2 hours for Pesach?
I have a question before we move on. Sorry.
Yeah, please.
Can you explain the Omer? Because isn't that barley, which I know is not exactly chametz, but it is it is prohibited.
Barley.
So okay. How can we, in biblical times, how are they able to, you know, actually, because it's an agricultural thing with the Omer, it's actually barley,
so,
right?
So, wheat, excellent point. Wheat, the 5 grains, wheat, barley, rye, oats, spelt, are those things chametz?
Not exactly.
When do they become chametz?
You leavening.
And what is the minimal definition of leaven?
18 minutes.
Eighteen minutes of what?
Rising time.
When? Yeah. Water. Oh, when somebody when it's come in contact with water, and you know, and basically the way it works is that based upon the yeast which are in the air, you will start to get a minimalistic leavening, but. Having a container of, in other words, in the time through the Middle Ages, Jews would take bags of wheat in the middle of Pesach, grind the flour, take the flour, add water, and make their own matzah fresh every single day. That was, in other words, it's only very recently that matzah making has become an industrial, non-household activity. Just interesting point. Before this whole commotion, I picked up 80 pounds of shmura matzah from a Borough Park bakery, and we sent it to our rabbi, OU JLC rabbi at Santa Monica College, and he's going to be making with all the college students their own matzah. You know, teaching them how to do it, and they're making their own matzah. So it's not. It used to be that every Jewish, typically women, would make the matzah fresh every day. Okay, it's not, okay, you have to be, there's certain laws and you got to be careful, but it's been outsourced into an industrial phenomena that's only about 150 years old, okay? It used to be everybody made your own matzah. Okay, so here's the goal. I want to challenge you all, I want to make the case, that you can prepare for your Pesach, your house, in 2 hours or less. Now, if people spend more time than that, they're spending their time on the wrong thing, as I'm about to explain. Pesach, because we talked about all the prohibitions of having no chametz, brings out every latent and not so latent OCD mentality in every Jew. Okay, so the thing is like this. What is the obligation? I'm going to explain. You have to divide your house into 2 parts. There's the kitchen, aka food production area, and every place else. You have to clean your house to the degree that on the night of the 14th, which is the night before the Seder, you can do an authentic searching for the chametz. Most people do the following. They basically they clean and check their house way before that, so it's chametz free, of course, and then they do a ceremonial candle feather thing. They put out a couple of things, and they do a looking around with a candle, and they gather the things, and they've called the checking of the chametz. That's not right. Really, you got to make your house bedika abol, check abol. You got to think. You got to think that you are working for law enforcement. And what does a law enforcement do when they're doing a checking of the room? they're going to check that every surface in a room that chametz is brought into has no chametz. Checking under the beds, on the every place. You got a visual okay that I saw, not just take a little candle, do a, you know, wishy-wishy zipper. I don't see any chametz. Gather the little breadcrumbs in the silver foil, gather them back, and then we'll go catch a movie. That's not a bedikas chametz.
You're saying you got to go full, like, CSI.
CSI for the rooms in your home where chametz is brought in. And not to do a neurotic cleaning. You don't have to shampoo your carpet. You have to have, the place has to be clean for Yontif, like every Shabbos in Yontif, A. And B, it has to be that it can't be like mounds of clothes and papers and just a mess, clutter, that a searching is basically impossible. So it's better to spend less time on the cleaning part and more on the actual, do an authentic halachic searching of every room that chametz is brought in. I'm going to pause right. Any questions about that? So people, like, they will do repainting. They will steam clean their ovens. They will get, like, teams of staff to, like, go crazy in their house. It is, there's no obligation like that. That's spring cleaning. That is not making your house eligible for an authentic CSI style checking for chametz. Okay? What is the obligation of, if a room, if chametz is brought into that room during the year, okay, then you have to check all the surfaces where you can reach, okay? Under the beds, around the beds, closet cupboards, closet pull, you know, everything, every surface area. And you have to render that room defined as searched. Just like when CSI, they finish the thing, they'll put the tape on there. This has been searched. Do not tamper it. Then you do all your rooms, and then you make, and then that's really halachic searching. Not a ceremonial, make a blessing, light the candle, little feather, little spoon, gather the things you put out, what you know that you put out. What up is that? That is a custom of, first of all, some people, the custom was done that other people put it out to ensure that you don't get lazy and not do a proper search. That's where that comes from, okay? Not that you put out the stuff and then, oh, I found this. You know what I mean? Like, hey, look at that. No, that's not really a search. That's not doing the mitzvah. The rabbinic mitzvah of searching and then destroying the chametz is looking through all your surface areas, and that's it. Now we got to talk about the kitchen. The kitchen requires special attention. Obviously, you want to use your kitchen, your counters, your sinks, your ovens. Certainly you got to clean up your refrigerator. That requires more work. That requires koshering, okay? So I'm just going to go through a quick run through. First of all, but if you're really lazy, let's say I'm going to give the most laziest option. If you don't want to do any koshering at all, okay? And this happens when MJers go to their family who are not observant, who are not interested in keeping kosher or in koshering. Very simple. What you do is that whatever thing you put in the oven, you double wrap it, you're good to go. When you do your search of the oven, you just make sure there's no chametz. Chametz is defined as a kazayit. About, you know, good chametz is a kazayit, you know, like an ounce. Little random crumbs in the corner of your living room is considered automatically nullified. Nobody wants it. It ain't nothing. It's garbage. Not the problem. The problem is you're worried about something, you're going to see a half a fat pretzel, and then you will forget that it's Pesach, and you'll munch on it. You know what I mean? You know, little discovery. Hey, look at that. Oh, pest. They want to avoid that problem. Okay.
That's a very specific example. Is that a personal?
Let's keep it real there, Matt.
Rabbi Penny, yeah. What if you buy new pots, let's say?
Yeah.
What is the situation with toveling in the mikvah right now because of coronavirus?
Yeah.
Good question.
That, of course, is an excellent question. So, so I'm on the chat with, there's a chat for congregational rabbis here in Israel and America, which I'm on, which is going like bazooties. So they're dealing with that problem because now regular mikvahs for women are open. and being that they have, you know, they make sure the chlorine level is sufficient, and of course they're going into hyper care about making sure everything's written down. And it's also not a group sport, shall we say? So you know, people go in there on an individual basis. It doesn't pose a problem. In the Upper West Side, there's a Kalim Mikvah. So I don't know what the latest is, but as soon as I know, I'll post about it. But if you get a new pot, you got to tovel it. Now, you don't have to tovel it in the Kalim Mikvah. You could tovel it in the you know, in the Hudson River, you know, but it's a little not convenient. But I'm not sure if, you know, some Kalim Mikvahs have been closed down. But I don't know the specifics of the Upper West Side, et cetera. So that I can let you know about.
Okay.
But you got to tovel. That's it. So, but then there's a those. I mean, everybody, many of you are just the basics. In order to make, if you want to use your kitchen in an unfettered way, first the refrigerator, you got to wipe it all out because it's going to come in contact with food. You don't have to align it. Okay, you people line everything. They put foil over everything. You just got to wipe it down, make sure there's no substance. Chametz is not a disease. It is not the coronavirus. It does not jump from person to person. It does not require a 6 foot of space, okay? Chametz is food. We love chametz. But for Pesach, we're not going to eat it. And if we, the problem is that if I put a hot pot on some chametz, I can then infuse chametz flavor into my pot, rendering my pot not kosher for Passover. So that's why you just got to make sure all the crumbs nice, clean of the refrigerator, okay? And obviously, and take out all the non-kosher Pesach stuff, give it away. If it's chametz, sell it if it's possible, etc. Counters wiped down. You just take a kettle, fill it up with hot water. The kettle's not been used 24 hours. You pour the kettle on the surface area. That surface is kosher for Pesach. If you don't want to do that, just make sure you put stuff on a towel, and that's fine. Next, the sink. If it's metal,
Rabbi Pitty, you can use a regular kettle that just hasn't been used in 24 hours.
Yes.
I mean, but if the kettle is on the counter and like bread is on there, like it doesn't have to.
If the chametz, because I don't want to go through some of the technicality, because you're doing this before. If the pot is clean and not been used for 24 hours, any flavor is considered spoiled, so it cannot add chametz to it. And this way, it will. The key principle. Let me just explain one thing. Koshering has one principle.
Okay.
I'm just gonna explain it right now. Kach bolo, kach polto. The way that it is absorbed and the flavor is brought in is the way that it is expelled. So therefore, if flavor is infused into a pot, into a pan, let's say by boiling, you got to boil it out. In other words, it's like reformatting a disc back in the old days. In other words, the way that it was, the flavor got in is the way you get the flavor out. So if you had a pasta pot, so the flavor of the pasta went in via boiling. So in order to make that pot kosher for Passover, you just have to boil it out, okay? Which is take the pot.
Okay, so two quick questions. So a plug-in water kettle essentially can be used, that's used regularly, you can use at the kosher for Passover, the counters.
Correct.
That are granite.
Correct.
Okay, second Correct. Question to you. In light that KJ is, I think, the KJ rabbinical leadership sent out today like an email about that there's not going to be communal koshering.
Yes.
So if we have, typically we throw our stainless steel pots into the KJ vat.
Yep.
So if we were not to use our, which is basically a steamer, you know, a double steamer, stainless steel, and a double boiler for chocolate and making any other sauces you want, we typically throw those in. If they haven't been used in 24 hours, then essentially Joel would just need to put them on the koshered stove and just heat them up and boil water in them.
So yes. So you can either start with a large pot, fill up with hot water. First you make that one kosher for Pesach, and then you put in everything else, which is metal, and you immerse it into that pot. And you can immerse it into parts. So let's say you have a big pot, you can't do the whole thing, so you can dip half one way, half the other way. In other words,
I was
So you're saying that if Joel takes, now we do have a kosher for fat Passover giant pressure cooker. So you're saying if Joel puts boiling water in the pressure cooker, large pot, and dips in partial piece sides of the steamer pot, then he can kosher it versus just keeping it on the stove boiling?
Either way, provided the water is, you're putting into the water as a rolling boil. I'm going to send.
Just one more. I'm sorry. So if I just take like a normal pot, stainless steel pot, hasn't been used in 24 hours. I put it on my stove, heat the water up in there and boil it for 24 hours.
No, I mean
24 hours. And then I bring it to a boil. That means it's kosher. The outside of the pot doesn't need to be dipped in somewhere else too.
Right. So so you can use, a regular pot, not been used for 24 hours, which has not been kosher for Passover, and you could use it to kosher everything else.
Okay,
so you can take a big pot, which not been clean, not been used 24 hours, go to a rolling boil, put your silverware in, put your metal stuff in there, and that's fine. It itself does not have to be kosher for Passover. I know it's a little bit, I don't have the time to be able to
explain
that paradox a little bit.
Okay, so you're saying that just by taking a normal stainless steel pot that we want to kosher for Passover, by putting on the stove and boiling water isn't going to kosher. That needs to be dipped into something else.
No. I'm saying you could use it. But all right.
I'll talk to you offline.
All right, Jay, let me just share. I'm going to send all the koshering details. I will. We're going to send out. MG's going to send out a little packet, which will have a step by step. So we'll keep it clear because I don't think I'm being clear enough. But all right.
Thank you so much.
That number one, you don't have to go crazy on the cleaning. You want to go put more time in the checking. If you don't want to do any of the koshering, you don't have to. You just have to clean the surfaces from any chunks of chametz or any small amount of chametz in the kitchen. The kitchen has to be chametz free. You can either kosher it so you can use it in an unfettered way, or you can line it, or you can wrap stuff up, double wrap it, and then just throw things in the oven, etc. All right, so I'm just saying that should not take you more than 2 hours. And certainly if you're in a smaller New York City apartment, that could take even less. I just want to stop at that point. Is that clear for everybody? Questions about that? The koshering can get a little confusing, so we'll just make it very clear step by step. We'll send out the packet, how to do it. But my point is that this, none of this has to be overwhelmingly, people did the stuff at home. And it's okay, you know. So it's very doable, and I believe you can do it all under 2 hours. Next, kosher food. First of all, we live in it. Even with the coronavirus, there's more kosher food available Pesach 2020 than there ever has been in the history of the Jewish people. The kosher food industry has expanding a wide variety of food choices. When I was growing up, living in Seattle, Washington, out of town, it was lame. There was very few things, and we had to get things imported from the big city like New York or Chicago or LA, and my mom had to scratch make everything, which, by the way, was delicious, but it was hard on her. Anyways, now you can go put an order at Seasons or at the kosher supermarket and wherever. And, you know, depending on the delivery thing, you can get yourself, don't have to cook at all for Pesach. It will be expensive, but you won't have to cook at all. So now you have a tremendous variety of food and products available to you. So that's that. Selling chametz. Selling chametz, ideally, you fill out the form and then we do a kinyan, a symbolic transaction, but here you'll fill out the form. MG will have the form on the website. You'll put your signature on it. You'll scan it and you'll send it back to them. And you'll make them your agent to sell the chametz. The rabbi who's going to sell it actually with the non-Jew actually has to do that in person. Okay, but that's not your problem. You're going to make him the agent. You're going to send it off. You know that you are selling the chametz. The end. Next, anybody here a firstborn male? All right, Max. So there's a custom of
am I going to be redeemed?
Yes.
Yeah, well, there's a fast of the firstborn, or you go to a siyum. So there's going to be siyumim online. You could join like that way. You do your own siyum. That'll be put out there. You could join the siyum, and then with the simcha of the siyum, you'll have to break the fast. I'm not going to that. Now, burning chametz, that's going to be typically it's done in various synagogues. The Jewish Center will have it. They're going to have to do, obviously, very precautions about social gathering, but they're going to work out a way. Those are the basic deals. We covered a lot of territory. I don't know if I answered all your questions, but just let's take it. Let's spend, we have, 5-10 minutes. Let's answer any questions you have on about Pesach. Before I get into that, next week, again, same time, 8 o'clock. The goal is we're going to have a sort of a DIY, do-it-yourself Seder. Assuming that either A, worst case scenario, you're having a Seder for yourself, which is super sad, or B, you're going to be running a Seder with a few amount of friends who are going to be 6 feet away or close relatives, whatever the space social distance allow you to do, but be able to, for you to run a complete, proper Seder. That's going to be the goal of next week. I'm going to actually have, I might send an email of stuff you want to have, like wine, we'll have some matzah, we'll sort of like do it interactively, but.
You know. Are we all going to get drunk together?
We can always, no, I'm down with it.
Let's do that. Yeah. I'm in. But I don't really drink very much, so I'll like sip on one glass of wine.
That's fine.
You'll have like 3 glasses by the time I've had one.
That's it.
I'm a slow drinker.
I think it's very important because, again, the situation is changing on a daily basis. You know, here in New York, Mayor de Blasio is considering an absolute lockdown, shutdown. So I don't even know. We don't know what's going to happen Pesach time. Hopefully, everybody should be, most importantly, should be healthy, them and their family, and everybody should be healthy. That's the most important thing. But so therefore, it might be just a very bizarre Pesach. So therefore, to be prepared, you need to be able to prepare to do this yourself. Okay? So I want to make sure you know how to do that as best you can. So that's our goal for next week.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Penny.
You got it. So everything up to the Seder, let's ask questions about that. If you have questions.
I have a question.
Get it.
So this came up actually over my dinner conversation with Jessica, which is exactly why this is such perfect timing. So with, we're concerned about, who knows what it'll be by the time Pesach comes, but we're concerned about, potentially having to really stock up on food and chametz. So a concern is like, if we have all this chametz in the house, how does that work within buying food for Pesach? Is there some kind of like prohibition and like overstocking on chametz right before Pesach?
So excellent question, Ethan. So the custom in the Jewish community for the last 200 years has been to sell overt chametz. In other words, bread, noodles, pasta, cereals, etc. There are many who do not sell. You should know, there are three customs or practices. One that sells everything, which I'd say is the most common practice. Some that only sell chametz if it's in a mixture, which is a separate, which is a lesser prohibition. And some that don't sell chametz at all. They eat it all down. Eat it down and give out the rest. Okay? So, but let's say you have a Costco closet filled with chametz. Can everybody visualize a Costco size filled with chametz? We got the pasta.
Literally pasta, my freezer right now.
Until the end of time. Okay? We got boxes of Cheerios and cereal deep into ready for October. Okay? So it's very simple. You could just, you'll have that chametz, and then you will just put all that in a closet. You will tape it shut, and you will sell it. And that's it.
Okay.
You could buy as much chametz as you, if you're using the sale, you could sell $5 of the chametz, or $5,000 of chametz. It doesn't make a difference. It works 100%.
Can we use the same freezer? Like if we have one freezer and it's full of frozen things, is there a way to like partition it off in a way, or is that not an option?
That's an excellent question.
Are we just not using the freezer during Passover?
Well, that's a big hardship. ideally, the chametz has to be in a separate domain, like a closet, a separate box.
Could you put it in a box in the freezer, or
and then wrap that box up as a separate thing? Let me double check about that. I think that is sufficient, but I want to double check. I don't know. I gotta get back into the swing of things here. So I will get back to you, Lauren. Thank you for the question.
No problem. It's a fun time over here.
Don't worry about it. I'm here, guys. As those who are aware, I think everybody's on my. If you're not on my Halacha Q&A, I'm just gonna post the I'll post it now. It's I'm pretty much good with getting back to people on that, especially Pesach time. I will try to get all the basic. I'm gonna copy. All right, so I'm gonna put it in the chat. You guys can copy that. All right, copy the chat if you want. If you're not already in my, that's my best way to get me during the day. In the night, I'll get back to you guys, especially Pesach. I try to do my best to be responsive to people. Okay, so that's a good way to get to. All right, so that's that. Next question. Any other questions?
I have one. I'm on a FEMA team here, and I'm not sure what. Like, is it possible to not do a Seder in your home and still do the Seder?
Sure. You don't have to be a Seder. The Seder does not have to be in your house. It's nice to be in your house. If you have, first of all, in Israel, this happens all the time. We have, Israel does not guard itself. There are Israeli soldiers who have to be doing, guarding the state of Israel, and they're going to have rather short Sedarim on a base or at a post or some very unpleasant places. So if you're a doctor or you're a part of a FEMA team or an emergency professional, you just pack your Pesach bag. And your Pesach bag will be wine, or if you can't drink wine, grape juice. You got your cup. You got your matzah. You got your mar. You put your basic Seder plate in little baggies, and you could just, and next we'll deal with the minimum. I can get you down to your basic Seder, 23 minutes. Now, I'm not going to say that's not going to be the most uplifting Seder, but you want to have a Seder. And I want to share a story about that. This is a story that the founder of Yeshiva Har Etzion that many of us visited or saw. We're at the Gush Winery. So the yeshiva near that community, Gush Etzion, some people who were we went different summers. We went to it some years, some we didn't in our Israel trip. The founder was Rabbi Yehuda Amitel. And they were it was in the Lebanon, I think it was the Lebanon War. And the soldiers, and it was right before, I don't know, it was a Miluim, something they were being called up for Pesach, and they were very upset. They're going to have a very, 20-minute Seder versus a nice, robust Seder in their home with the family, discussions, the five-star experience. And he said he went through the Holocaust. And he had a white shirt, which he kept hidden. I think he was in concentration camps. And then Friday night, he would unfold that one white wide shirt and put it on for 1 minute so he could have a taste of Shabbat. Life is not always normal or ideal. And it might be that your Seder this year might be 22 minutes. But you want every one of those 22 minutes to be powerful and meaningful. Just like Rabbi Amital put on a white shirt in a concentration camp for 1 minute to celebrate Shabbos. All right. We are on uncertain times. We have to do the best that we can. And it's not going to be the way that we've had in years past. And it might be that you're doing Seder for yourself, not in your home, in an uncomfortable situation. But if you're going to do the Seder, you know, for 5 or 10 or 20 minutes, whatever you're allotted to, just make sure that's powerful.
Rabbi Penny, on that note, is there a Haggadah you recommend for that's maybe on point for this period in time?
I mean, I would recommend this or that. I'm glad you brought it up, Daki. Is that right now we are literally at home. Now, many of you are working from home, but you might have more discretionary time. There's no commute involved anymore. You can't, there's no going out to restaurants, bars, movie theaters. The time is to take if you have a Haggadah or there's many Haggadot online, use the opportunity to prepare, not by cleaning and shopping, but preparing to add depth, breadth, and scope to your Seder. That's where you should use the resource of time that is being gifted to you right now. So that's what I recommend. And there's numerous amounts of great and inspiring Haggadot, right? Jonathan Sacks is a favorite. Last year we had Rabbi Aaron Goldschreiter come to MG. He had to put together a beautiful Haggadah. There's so many Haggadot. You could, again, Amazon's still delivering Prime, guys. They got everything. Some dude's going to be not going to ring your bell and drop in the box and scampering away. So you can get an outstanding selection of Haggadot and use the time that you're gifted to read and things to inspire yourself and others. That's what I recommend. You got the time. Don't throw it away. And also, I'll just say, I'm guilty of this myself. We, in this time, in our sense to get the control of the uncontrollable, we're constantly reading endless news sites and endless updates and endless WhatsApp posts, and all it is making us more crazy. I'm not saying to be ill-informed, but cut down on the unnecessary screen time. Shut the computer, probably better for you on many levels. Sit down on a quiet pace. A glass of tea or a glass of wine, whatever you're feeling, and open up Haggadah and just read through it and questions and things you want to think about and explore. And this is your time. Don't throw it away. Any questions?
That was very beautiful, Rabbi Penny, and yeah. Inspirational. Thank you.
My pleasure. All right, guys. We will reconvene next week. And we're going to do a do-it-yourself Seder. And hopefully we'll all be blessed with Seders with our family and with the people we want to be at and in the environment that we would like to be in. But we want to be prepared. All right, guys. Laila Tov, everyone.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye. Good night. Bye.
Bye.